The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Seahawks are on a roll. We're going to give away Seahawk tickets today. We'll tell you about that coming up in a little bit. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're giving away Seahawk tickets here on The Big Show. So keep listening for your chance to win. Huge win yesterday for the Seahawks. And Pete Carroll had his first post-game press conference or interview this morning with Brock and Salk. So Brock Huard will join us with the Monday Monson quarterback coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. And we have an awful lot of other news to talk about as our region continues to descend into madness. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
And a story that has gotten pretty much ignored by the mainstream media over this weekend, but it is by far the most shocking local story of the weekend. On Saturday afternoon, Antifa had a protest in downtown Seattle. A mob of about 150 people were down blocking sidewalks. And the group that was behind it is a Seattle socialist group that is also hosting an upcoming open borders rally. They want all illegals to be able to come into this country unimpeded. And so that was the big message. And so Antifa was down there, and we've seen what's happened in Portland, where things have gotten unbelievably violent and dangerous. In Portland, Antifa has taken over the streets because Portland police and mayor have shown incredible weakness in protecting the city, protecting the citizens. And you may recall the audio that we had a few weeks ago where people were just trying to drive someplace, including an elderly man. He wanted to turn right on a street, a legal turn, and Antifa was blocking the street. They said that they were going to tell everybody where they could and could not drive because they had taken over the streets. And this guy was scared to death. He keeps driving at 2 miles an hour. One of the Antifa guys got in front of his car, and the guy just kept slowly driving. The Antifa guy was, you know, about to get run over, so he jumped out of the way. But then they chased the guy a block down and started smashing his car with their batons and other weapons. They were threatening this man's life. Antifa has taken over the streets of Portland. And we are dangerously close to them attempting to do the same thing here in Seattle. And what I saw from Seattle police this weekend, and I will tell you, we talked off air with Seattle police, and they said, look, we don't want to give them more attention than they deserve. But they said that they were happy with how they handled it. But there's this one guy who's based in Portland who has chronicled a lot of Antifa's overtaking the streets down there. His name is Andy Ngo. And he has a YouTube channel, and he will go down and just record these Antifa mobs and the violent language and rhetoric that they use. Well, at one point on 4th Avenue in Seattle on Saturday, Antifa had blocked off a sidewalk. They had about six of them standing abreast, and they wouldn't let anybody walk down the sidewalk on this one block. And this Andy guy, who is a private citizen journalist, he wanted to walk down the block. And he's got his phone out, and he's recording the Antifa people, most of whom have masks over their faces. And the Seattle police, there was a fence alongside the sidewalk, and Seattle police were lined up right outside of the fence. And Andy repeatedly asked him, can I walk down this sidewalk? And I'll play you that audio in just a moment here. But here are some of the things that Antifa was yelling. And this was, again, their motivation is open borders, let the illegals into this country. And they hate Trump.
Say it loud! Say
Okay, so that was their chant that was going on.
Nazis go home! Nazis go home! Nazis go home! Nazis go home! Nazis go home!
Okay, so this Andy Ngo, he wanted to walk down the sidewalk, and a guy came up to him and said, "I can see by your eyes that you're of Asian descent." And from there,
see in your eyes that you got some Asian descent. Check your history. The history shows you that you can't trust your enemy, but that you're using your enemy against us. Spying. Yeah, because it's coming. It's coming. I'm bringing the energy. That's why they keep checking on you. You understand? Because they want to know. Because I'm known to do this for real. Because some of us didn't really come to talk. Some of us really come to die, dude.
Okay, some of us didn't come to talk. Some of us came to die. Now, I will also tell you that several of the Antifa people were armed with automatic weapons. They had AR-15s, and they're standing there blocking the sidewalk from private citizens of this city with, you know, and they're standing there like a militia. And is that illegal? No. But if you are impeding other people being able to walk down the sidewalk, and Seattle police are watching all of that. But this guy is telling Andy that he's going to die if he records Antifa. I mean, that sounds to be the threat here.
Are you willing to die for a YouTube sh-? Yeah, but that's what's going to come, man. Death is coming to you, dude.
Death is coming to you, dude. Are you willing to die for your YouTube stuff? Because that's what's going to happen. He's going to die. Death is coming to you because a private citizen is recording what Antifa is doing on the streets of downtown Seattle.
To feel that energy, that's why your heart's pounding. I'm here to let you know, judgment's here. And you spying and doing this is going to get you end up hurt.
Going to get you hurt, he says. So, and this is what I found remarkable, and Seattle police, again, we talked to them this morning, and they are defending how they handled this. They said that they didn't want to incite, they didn't want to escalate. But all of the violence, and at one point, a woman, after Andy did get inside their barricaded sidewalk, a woman came right up to him with a bullhorn and is screaming right in Andy's ear. And he said that he felt physical pain from her screaming over her bullhorn into his ear. And he was, you know, in great danger, it looked like. All of the violence, all of the, you know, words that you're hearing that were, you know, so hateful were coming from the Antifa people. And so here's what Seattle police officer told Andy as he was recording Antifa taking over the sidewalks downtown.
At some point you're inciting conflict, and then we're going to take some action here and remove you from the area. Right? Do you understand that?
Okay. Told Andy that he's inciting conflict, and they're asking him to remove himself from the area. Now, again, every member of Antifa has a phone. They're all holding up their phones recording. One of the cops at one point said to the Antifa guys, why can't he walk down the sidewalk? And they said, because it's ours. But now another cop is telling Andy that he's the one inciting violence.
At some point you're inciting conflict, and then we're going to take some action here and remove you from the area. Right? Do you understand that?
How am I inciting conflict?
Oh. Because we're ending up in confrontation here. And this can become a public safety issue.
Okay.
Where it's difficult for us to manage with people potentially getting hurt.
Okay.
Okay, now if you want to protest, you have the absolute right to exercise your
I'm not protesting.
Rights,
okay? Okay, I don't understand that. So if Andy's screaming and protesting, then he'd have a right to do it. But if he is just down there recording and chronicling what they're saying, then they want to remove him. And then the cop said something, and maybe the cop didn't intend it like this, but man, did this come out wrong.
You have a right to be where you want to be to a certain extent as well. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Right there. You have the right to be where you want to be to a certain extent. I didn't realize that we only had the right to be in public areas to a certain extent. And again, what the cop's saying is your presence is inciting the mob and we could see violence. But Andy wasn't being violent. He was being a citizen journalist. And he's protected by the First Amendment. And as I said, I didn't see any local TV stations. I checked all the websites. I didn't see any local TV stations cover what happened on Sunday after or on Saturday afternoon. And so the only person covering this and providing the information about this is this citizen journalist. And when the cops say you got to be removed because you're inciting by virtue of your presence. Now, again, Seattle police defended this to us. They said, look, we don't want to come on and comment because we don't want to give Antifa any more attention. But I want to make sure that we know that when the cops are telling the person who's just chronicling what the mob is doing. And by the way, Antifa has a right to be down there protesting. They can hate Trump all they want, and they can call for illegals to come into the country all they want. I'm not saying they should not be allowed, but they can't block sidewalks. And they can't tell citizens that they, Antifa, have taken control of the streets, because that's what's happened in Portland. And that's what happened Saturday in Seattle. And the cops were essentially protecting Antifa and telling an individual First Amendment protected citizen journalist that he was inciting and that he has the freedom to be anywhere to a certain extent.
You have a right to be where you want to be to a certain extent as well. Okay?
Uh-huh.
But if we're inciting a potential...
Okay, just let me know when you think that I'm doing that and how I can de-escalate.
Okay.
So, you know, you can hear Andy, he knows how to, you know, be cool throughout all these situations, but he was treated like garbage. Here's where they would not let him walk down the sidewalk.
What are you doing?
Walking through here.
I don't think we want to let you walk through.
That's okay.
I'm not going to touch it.
No, Nazis out. Nazis out. Nazi fascists out. No. Out.
So you heard him say that he just wanted to walk down the sidewalk and they said, we won't let you. Now we're getting to scary times here where the Antifa crowd, the Antifa mob is, you know, they're emboldened. And Seattle police say, look, if we had swept in and if we had, you know, when they were blocking the sidewalk, Seattle police certainly would have had cause to arrest them. But they say, look, then things would have just blown up and we would have had, you know, some possibly dangerous violence. But when you allow a mob to think they own the streets, then it becomes a problem that's just going to escalate. And on a Saturday in December, when a lot of people are downtown, you know, some people still like to go downtown and do Christmas shopping. Downtown, why somebody would want to go to downtown Seattle, the way the criminals, the drug addicts, Antifa have taken over the streets, it is beyond me. I cannot understand how we have allowed things to descend to the depth that it's at right now. But it is, once again, a lack of leadership. Our city council, our mayor, in this case, I think police could have been a lot tougher. The police disagree with me. The cops say if we had been tougher, things would have gotten violent and we would have had a much more dangerous scene on our hands. And I accept that. I respect that's their position. But I also find it incredibly troubling when you have a mob of people who, you know, whose cause is driven by the Socialist Party. And that's the organizer. They want illegals to come unfettered into this country and they hate President Trump. They despise President Trump. So they stand out there on a Saturday afternoon in downtown Seattle screaming expletives about the president. It's one way to spend a Saturday, I guess. But we are in danger of losing control of this city. The drug addicts have escalated crime to a shocking level. Property crimes go unsolved, which is why we have the worst property crime of any major city in the United States. Antifa sees that this area is ripe for the picking, just as Portland has been, for them to just simply take over the streets. And at some point, you know, sometime when they're blocking a street, as they did in Portland, somebody's going to be so upset by that that there could be some real mayhem. And I think we should nip this in the bud before we get to that level. So I'm glad there are guys like Andy and Go out there. And again, I'm going to repeat, I support the right of Antifa or anybody else to march in public spaces. I mean, this was an unpermitted rally by them. But I support their free speech rights. Just because I disagree with having open borders and letting illegals across, that doesn't mean other people shouldn't be free to say that, if that's what they believe. But you cannot let mobs take over and close down sidewalks and streets. And if we continue to allow it to head in that direction, things are going to continue to get more and more dangerous on the streets of Seattle. That is your Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
But on a much lighter note, on Sunday, the Seahawks brought a lot of fun to the streets of downtown Seattle, and they looks almost inevitable that they're marching to the playoffs. Pete Carroll talked with Brock Huard and Mike Salk this morning, and we'll recap that with Brock, the Monday Monson quarterback, coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
It's the Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue and it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. With a 12s, here the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up, making a catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Monday afternoon, and the Seahawks continue what now looks like an almost inevitable march to the playoffs. And it's time to talk with the Monday Monson quarterback, and that is Brock Huard. Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dory. I dare you to say that to Pete Carroll when you talk to him later in the week. Say, Pete, what a run. What a great, it's inevitable you're going to make the playoffs. I dare you to open your interview with them this week, Dory.
You know how I love a good dare, but I also would just shut down the entire interview if I started with something like that.
Yes, it would.
He does not like stuff like that. But they are, if you look at the analytics, they have an 86% chance now of making the playoffs. And the way they're playing, it's, man, this is fun. And the thing about it, Brock, is this isn't just get into the playoffs and one and done. This is a team that could do some damage in January.
Yeah, it is feeling more and more like 2012. I don't think there's any question about it. When the program really turned mid-season, the little quarterback back then by the name of Russell Wilson, the team started to believe in him. They opened it up. They did more things. There was a clear identity to that team. And then they really rolled and won 2, 3, 4 in a row, played great football, and then got in the playoffs, went on the road, if you remember, beat RG3 in Washington, and were 30 seconds away from beating Atlanta down in their building. And, you know, at a bunch of different points this year, we've seen glimpses of that 2012.
Yes.
Just through the identity, through guys loving playing for one another, with one another, really growing in their roles. Young guys that have emerged this season. And as I was saying on my radio show this morning, Dory, you know, these seasons don't come out of nowhere. You need your best players. And it doesn't matter if it was my dad coaching high school football in Puyallup. I'm sure when you were coaching your state champion team, your best players have to be at their best.
Yes.
And right now that means Russell. Right now that means Bobby. Right now that means Frank Clark. And all those guys are having career years, and it's sure been a blast to follow.
Yeah, and Bobby Wagner may have had the best game of his career with a career-defining play right in the midst of it.
Slot left side. Seattle rushes three. Mullen throws to the middle. It's intercepted. Going the other way. He's out across the 30, the 40, midfield, down the far sidelines. Is he going to outrun everybody? He is. It's Bobby Wagner from the goal line. 99 yards. He lays down in the end zone. Somebody bring him oxygen. Bobby Wagner all the way the length of the field.
Oh, officially a 98-yard touchdown, the longest in Seahawks history. And this morning on Brock and Salk, they talked to Pete Carroll about that.
Wow, what a game. What a game. In so many aspects of it, too. You know, it wasn't just the plays that you're standing out. He was all over the place and running the show and really, really right in his element, man. He had a great football game.
The stat line was incredible, Brock. He forced a fumble. He recovered a fumble. He returned an interception for a touchdown. He sacked the quarterback. He had other hits for losses. I mean, it was phenomenal to watch.
Yeah, you know what I loved, I think, the most, Dory, was he also rushed on blitzes five or six times yesterday, and that was going to be in the plan from the beginning. It was Ken Norton that was headbutting Austin Calitro, right, the other fill-in linebacker. It was a mindset you could tell from the jump that they were not going to let a 2-9 team get comfortable, come in their building, get all sorts of completions, and maybe move the football. Defensively, they were going to dictate. They were going to set the edge. And to me, that's certainly when Bobby is at his best. I would love to see that continue over the next, you know, 4 weeks. Monday night, Kirk Cousins is a special quarterback. He's a talented guy with a lot of really elite wide receivers. But if that side of the ball can take the ball away, if they can dictate a little bit with the clear identity offensively, you become, like you said, not just a playoff contending team, but a playoff winning team that nobody's going to want to see.
Yeah, if Bobby Wagner's the best defense player on the field, Russell Wilson, many games, certainly has the possibility of being the best offensive player, and they have a running game. Rashad Penny, the rookie, had some big runs. This guy had some big runs yesterday.
At the 28-yard line of San Francisco, Carson gets the handoff. He comes left. He's got running room, 20, 15, 10, dragged down at the 5-yard line by Witherspoon.
Chris Carson helped the Seahawks rush for about 170 yards yesterday, and that was another thing that Brock and Salk talked with Pete Carroll about today.
He's got style, you know. He's got a way about him. And I always say that 32 just looks so good sometimes, you know. And he had the one on the, when he catches the flat route.
Yes.
Oh, boy, that was just a beautiful, you know, demonstration of athleticism and explosion, like you're saying. And he's tough now. And so I'm so fired about all of our guys running the football. I mean, you can see Rashad had a couple great-looking runs also. Let's go back out there and just keep doing it. You know, let's keep running, you know, and let those guys go at it. And it just sets everything up.
We've talked that there have been some ups and downs with Pete Carroll this season and with his team and with his mood when you talk to him on Mondays and when I talk to him on Fridays. But he just seems like he is on top of the world right now.
Well, it's the program is clicking the way that it's supposed to. It's like a business and you got your plan. And those numbers are penciling. It's coming together. People are enjoying coming to the office, and they all feel like you're pulling together. And unlike the last few years where we all pretended like it was in the past, where there was still competition and there was still guys that just loved coming to the office every day, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And this year, I think some of the young pieces, the new blood, and getting back to their identity of being a run team and a defense team, and again, Russell just playing great. And by the way, you know why Mike and I chuckle every time Pete mentions number 32, because he won't say why he loves that number and who Chris Carson reminds him of.
Yeah, it's like a game he's been playing with you guys. Yeah, it's like a game he's been playing with you guys for 2 years. He says that he reminds him of another 32, but he won't tell you who that is.
Yeah, well, I know who it is. It's O.J., and it's all those years that O.J. was running wild at USC and in the NFL, and there is. just that style, just a big old dude that is so unbelievably athletic and just runs through people. There's a whole lot of comparison there. And, you know, over 700 yards, let's hope he gets to 1,000, because if he does, this team's going to be in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, they, you know, first round, they could play the Cowboys, they could play the Bears, they could play the Vikings in the first round. But, I mean, there's not a team that they're going to go up against that they're going to be overwhelmed or overmatched by.
No, and then that team down in L.A. that won the NFC West yesterday, they're going to be rooting that the Seahawks lose. They're going to make sure Sean McVay, the head coach, you know, is going to say, well, a lot of these other teams are a bit flawed, and stylistically, if they try to play the game we play, we're better than them. Don't really want to see that team in Seattle. Right. Hard to beat a team three times, and as close as those two games have been, I don't think they want to see the Seahawks come January either.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Well, it was sure a fun day yesterday, and it's just good to be on that playoff roll. And I know it's great for you guys when you have to talk about this 5 days a week. It's a lot more fun when a team's playing like this.
Oh, there's no question. No question. And I just can't reiterate it enough. I mean, you see the positive play, the blowout win yesterday. But when guys enjoy each other, when they just enjoy going on that field, and you feel it, there's just not anybody that's not having the time of their lives. And these young guys continuing to grow. That's what it was like when it was, you know, Seahawks 1.0. And
yeah,
we got to enjoy that ride. And that's certainly what it's feeling like again. And Monday night, they're going to need it. They're going to need the 69,000 in that building to be alive, and we can't wait to talk about it.
Okay. Well, good luck with all this football talk, because, you know, you're going to really need good luck with your Mariners talk the next 2 years.
No question about that. That's for another day.
Yeah, okay. All right, Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback, and it's brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Thank you, Brock. We got lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Oh, man, the Seahawks roll on, roll on, roll on, roll on.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on anything we are discussing. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Oh, man, politics is so civil. What a wonderful world politics can be. This was great. In the Illinois State House, they're discussing if you some veterans in a veteran's home there, they got Legionella bacterium, you know, Legionnaire's disease. And right now, there's a law that caps the payout at $100,000 if you are a victim of Legionella bacterium in a state-run home. And a Democrat has proposed raising the payout amount to $2 million. A Republican said $500,000 to $600,000 would be significantly more than the $100,000 we're at now. They both agree we need to raise the amount that these families can get. They just are trying to agree on how much it should be. So a Democratic rep, Stephanie Kifowit, who's upset that the Republicans want to raise the cap to only $500,000 or $600,000, she stood on the floor of the House and said this about one of her fellow Republican House members.
To the representative from Lombard, I would like to make him a broth of Legionella and pump it into the water system of his loved one so that they can be infected, they can be mistreated, they can sit and suffer by getting aspirin instead of being properly treated, and ultimately die. And we are talking about...
Can you imagine a human being more miserable and evil? This is a Democratic state rep who wants her Republican colleague and his wife and children to get, she wants to make a broth. I mean, she sounds like a witch. She wants to make a broth of Legionella bacterium and pump it into his family's water system so they can all die. This is what passes for civility of public discourse, I guess. from a Democratic rep?
Into the water system of his loved one so that they can be infected, they can be mistreated, they can sit and suffer by getting aspirin instead of being properly treated, and ultimately die. And we are talking about our nation's heroes. We are talking about World War II veterans that survived combat, survived war, survived unthinkable situations that they were put in to sit back.
Okay, so anyway, they disagree on how much the compensation should be. So she wants the Republican colleague and his wife and children to die from Legionnaires. Okay, so a Republican, not the one she was talking about, but a Republican colleague of the guy she was talking about, Jeannie Ives, she got up and said, are you kidding me?
How dare you? How dare you concoct up some sort of story about brewing up some batch of Legionnaires and having him feed it to his family? How dare you take the discussion and the debate about a very serious bill that has huge cost consequences on both sides, oh, by the way, both for the victim and the state taxpayer. How dare you take an honest debate about an issue and then wish death on my colleague Peter Breen, his wife, and his two adopted kids? It is unbelievable. Unbelievable, but it's just par for the course. Because this is exactly what we saw in the election cycle. Oh, there you go. Peter Breen and my buddy Tom Morrison, father of four. Yeah, they support child predators. Yeah, that's what you guys think. That's the kind of garbage you spew into people's minds. You're taking a serious issue and you're wishing death on colleagues and then smearing everybody else. And then what do you guys do on the other side? You clap. Oh, yeah, we agree. Peter Breen and his family should die.
Yeah, that was what was unbelievable about this. After that Democrat gave her speech saying she wanted this guy and his wife and their two adopted kids to die from Legionnaires, the Democrats in the House applauded for her. I mean, it's a particular depth of evil.
Oh, and then Mr. Carroll gets up there, too, and then says, yeah, you know, I agree with the eloquent words of my colleague. Really? Really? We can't discuss an issue here without you guys wishing death on Republicans?
It's a great response. Well, the Democrat now has said, I offer my sincere apology to Representative Breen, his family, and all of my colleagues for my poor choice of words. In a serious discussion, I would never wish any harm or mortality on anyone's family. Evil. Pure evil. Fast 15's coming up next.